This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com.
That could be about tonight. It could also be about what many people feel is the inevitability of Carolina, New York Rangers. I guess I'm going to say part two. We'll kind of kick out bubble hockey.
Yeah.
And that 3-0 sweep by Carolina. We all remember the seven-game series here where home team, home team, home team, home team. Oh, we got to game seven, road team. That's where Carolina had the reputation of not being able to win on the road, which I guess was deserved because they did not win a road game in those playoffs. Greg Wyshynski, senior NHL writer, ESPN, but he's so much more than that. He is a media star, TV, podcast. Sir, how you doing?
Yes. King of all media, they call me in this house. I think my dog barks it at me.
Nice.
But no, it is interesting to think that it does sync up where the Hurricanes could end up playing both of the New York City teams in a row. One definitely more of a daunting task than the other, I think it's safe to say.
Probably,
but,
yeah.
But yeah, it could be a fun little time.
Yeah, certainly good for all the people who live in Cary who have both sets of jerseys. All right, let's. I'm not even telling a lie there. It is very true. How are we looking at game two? Because I think there's two ways of looking at it. I talked about this with Rod Brindamore. I've talked about it myself, whether it's on the show, on my podcast, about the Canes, which we do after every game. You could talk about a 3-0 blown lead, or we could talk about we're surprised that it took Carolina as long to get to three goals based on the way they dominated the game. How is this being discussed?
It's being discussed, like you said, in very distinct ways between Carolina and the Islanders. The Islanders see it as trying to pull the positive out of this thing that they had a 3-0 lead and then trying to rationalize Carolina carrying play the way that it did as we tried to sit on the lead. You know, we didn't really get as aggressive or force the issue like we did in the beginning of the game. I think Patrick Waugh said after game two that they just stopped winning one-on-one battles, and that tells you that there's a lack of intensity and effort there in trying to close out this game. So they're kind of treating it like it's all a big old mental mistake on our part
right,
to blow a 3-0 lead and then, of course, to give up two goals in 9 seconds. And they see that as recoverable. They see that as something fixable. Well, Carolina, I think, is probably pointing to their dominance in that game and their winning game one and say, no, actually, we're the demonstrably the better team in the series when we turn our game on, and there's really nothing the Islanders are going to be able to do about it.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, and I talk to a lot of people on Long Island about this. The Islanders should have won game one. I mean, that was the game. They had their scoring chances were far greater than Carolina's, and they just didn't do enough with them. And when you leave the game to chance in the third period, Carolina took advantage of the one great break, the deflection that left the puck to Steph Nason in front of Varlamov, and he just kind of shoveled it in off of Varley. It wasn't like a great shot, and then you know Carolina's defense was able to lock it down the rest of the way. But they were lucky to win game one, and I think Carolina felt that way. Certainly, Evgeny Kuznetsov's bench interview let everybody know that he was not happy about the way they played. And I think we're never going to see the dominance that we saw again in the last 30 minutes of that game. But I think you kind of intimated this, that Carolina is just the better team.
They are, and I don't think it's out of question that we could see that dominance again. I mean, that's the Hurricanes can play. And I've seen the Islanders get dominated like that in the last couple of years at times when they don't seem like they can generate anything against a team that controls pace and controls play and gets the majority of shot attempts. But I think your point's an important one, and I think it's something that unless you've been watching this series that maybe people have missed, which is that the Islanders can certainly pull a number of positives out of those first two games. Definitely with the way they played in game one, definitely in the beginning of game two, and build on that. I mean, if you're Patrick Waugh, you're not happy being out 0-2, but it's not as if you look at those two games and say, we are facing an uphill climb. We you simply can't traverse. You know, you're looking at those two games and saying there's ample evidence here that we can maybe find our way in this series, and it begins in game three.
Yeah, look, I know both teams, the weird part of this season series was that each team won games on the other's ice only. It was just weird. Carolina won both games at UBS. The Islanders won both games down here at PNC, but one of them each in overtime. But all you have to do, I mean, the Islanders are making the goaltending change to Ilya Sorokin. Rod Brind'Amour has not yet announced that he will probably start Freddie Anderson. But, you know, I don't think we'd be all that shocked to see Anderson go out again. Although I don't think he's been great, although I thought he was great in the second half of game one. I didn't think he was great in game two, but he didn't have to be after the third goal went in. But you could certainly get a lot of momentum out of Ilya Sorokin starting.
Adam Gold here with my man, Coach Pete DeRuta, Capital Financial Advisory Group. Are most of your clients hands-on, or they just give you their money and let it work for them?
About 90% give the money, and then we meet every year and go through status reports, sure. Have a financial pit stop, making sure everything's fine. It is like a puzzle, Adam, but for the next 10 of you, we'll solve your own retirement puzzle at no cost or obligation.
Call and claim your comprehensive review with Coach Pete and the team, 888-843-0013, or text Adam to 600-700.
Adam Gold is a paid spokesman. Investment advisory services offered by Capital Financial Advisory Group, a North Carolina registered investment advisor.
Here, the thing about Sorokin that's interesting is you could make the argument, and with due respect to Matt Barzal, that Sorokin's the most popular player on the Islanders. I mean, when you go to an Islanders game, the amount of Sorokin jerseys, the amount of Sorokin chants, I think that this move is as much about trying to elevate the momentum they're going to get from their fans in this arena tonight as it is a tactical change in goal. Because, I mean, outside of the Martinuk goal, which was more, I think, on the Noah Bobson turnover than it was Varlamov looking the other way, when he scored it, you know, I think Varlamov played pretty well. And so I think you're making this change if you're Patrick Waugh as a conversation changer, as a chance to have these fans and have this team get inspired by the most popular guy on the team being back in goal. Oh, and by the way, a guy that Patrick Waugh has not always backed this season sufficiently.
Right.
And a guy that would have a bit of a redemption arc if he was to pull out a victory in game three. There's a lot of narrative here, and I don't think that coaches are ignorant to it.
Let me just move on to a couple of other series while we have Greg Wyshynski, ESPN senior NHL writer. Dallas, not good. 0-2 at home. 0-2 at home. Like, is it the mystique of the defending champs? My view on Dallas has been, I don't see him obviously a ton, but I have watched him a handful of times this year. I think they are the best counter-punching team in the league. They have great size. They play great defense for the most part. They haven't gotten the best of Jake Oettinger, but we know he's great. We know how good he is. But that if you don't give them opportunities, if you don't hand them opportunity, make mistakes, they struggle to create. Has that been what has happened against Vegas?
Partially. I mean, Oettinger was garbage in game one, and he's the reason they lost game one, but he was good last night. But again, the problem for Dallas, and they talked about this after game one, is you got to get a lead against this Vegas team, because otherwise they're going to insulate their goalie like few teams can in this league. I mean, in game one, Vegas had 20 block shots. All of those block shots happened after they got a 4-2 lead. Like that's how they kind of bring it back, insulate their goalie, and play incredibly defensively well under Bruce Cassidy. Now, the task at hand for Dallas is very daunting. I had some numbers run by ESPN Stats and Info. Since the wild card was instituted in 2013-2014, we have had the teams that have lost the first two home games, despite having home ice advantage, are 2-10 in the first round and 3-24 overall. So, like, That's the task at hand for Dallas right now, is this idea that if you don't take advantage of your home ice advantage, and at a worst case scenario get a split, you are well behind the eight ball. And especially in this series, you got to go now try to win in Vegas, which is tough, and beat the defending Stanley Cup champions, who look maybe even better than they did last year at this point. So, like, Dallas is really in a bad spot, and it sucks, because I was with everybody else thinking that this was a good deep team with great goaltending that could make a run this year. I didn't pick them to get out of the West, but I certainly didn't think they'd go out in the first round. But they had the bad luck of the draw in getting a reconstituted Vegas team.
And by the way, I'm sure none of your statistical data also counts going up against the defending Stanley Cup champs, who are getting Mark Stone back off long-term injured reserve. So Sheldon Keefe is not a fan of Brad Marchand. Can I just say that definitively?
Nobody in Toronto is a fan of Brad Marchand.
It's amazing.
We just talked about it on our podcast, The Drop, today. It'll be out later today, about whether this man is the greatest rat in hockey. And he is. And he's the greatest rat because nobody is better at agitation. Nobody is better, as Sheldon Keefe pointed out, in getting away with things and then also drawing penalties. But to be a king of the rats, you can't just be like Nick Cousins. You can't just be someone who like agitates and does some good things.
Right.
To be a king of the rats is you do all of that, and then you score the game-winning goal. And that is why Marchand is one of the more extraordinary talents that we've had in this league in the last 20 years. We've probably talked about it before on this show about like the Hall of Fame and who gets in and who gets out.
Yes.
But I mean, I think this guy's a Hall of Famer. You could make the argument that until Kirill Kaprizov came around in recent years, that this guy was the second best left wing behind Alex Ovechkin in the league in the last 25 years. And he is a unique talent, and they win that game because of him last night. No other reason. Maybe Swayman a little bit, but he's the reason they win that game last night in Toronto.
That shot to make it 3-2, 28 seconds after Toronto equalized, was as elite a release and placement as you're going to see. And he is great, and he gets away with some stuff. But I don't know that anything he did last night was... Well, maybe they could have sent both he and Bertuzzi that he was, connected with on the 1-1 goal. Maybe they could have sent them both off, but I was okay on the Frederick goal. I was okay with them doing nothing there because I think all you're doing is sending both guys off because they were just engaged with one another. I don't know. Maybe I'm looking at it wrong.
At a minimum, though, play should have stopped. at a minimum, that Frederick doesn't get that shot off, at a minimum. I think that was a trip, but again, like, you know, listen, then we're playing the game of, well, you know, if they didn't call this high stick,
right.
You know, all this nonsense. The bottom line is that he's a crafty, crafty operator, and you know, whether he's doing stuff behind the play or the puck's coming off his stick, he affects the game in a way that only a handful of players can. I mean, like, look, the Leafs win game two because of Austin Matthews, in my opinion.
Right.
The Bruins win game three because of Brad Marchand.
All right, final thing, and you can be as quick as you want here, Greg Wyshynski. Tampa, Florida is 2-0 in favor of Florida. I think Tampa can probably feel like, man, we were right there. But in many ways, it reminds me of how Carolina was right there.
Yeah.
But there was a reason that Florida was ahead 2-0 in the series. I think the same thing about this one. I want Tampa. I picked Tampa. I love the Lightning. I think Florida's just kind of flexing on them a little bit.
Yeah, the moral of the story is stay out of overtime against that team. I mean, the Panthers get to overtime, and they've got so many guys, Verhage, Kachuk, all these guys that just can play the hero. The advantage the Panthers had in the series coming in was the disadvantage I felt like the Lightning had all year, which is quality of depth. I mean, at some point, it comes home to roost that the Lightning, one, are missing Sergachev due to injury, but are also short Killorn and Ward and Coleman and all these guys that built such an impressive supporting cast for those cup championship teams that, you know, once Killorn leaves in the offseason last year, you're looking at this roster and you're saying, I don't even know who the hell half these guys are anymore. And so they go up against a deep Panthers team, Panthers with home ice. And then of course, like, you know, they have become masters of winning these one goal games in the playoffs. And, you know, Lightning are in trouble. Somebody asked me the other day about the Eastern Conference playoffs, and I say there's a better chance of the Islanders rallying against the Hurricanes than there is the Lightning rallying against the Panthers.
Ooh, that's spicy. Greg Wyshynski, on the drop, I don't know if I texted this to you when I saw it, but Arda was doing was between the benches, I believe, for a Hurricanes game, and it was the worst raise the roof I've ever seen. So I don't know if you guys talked about that, but, I mean, that was like 20 years old.
You know, I don't have him on the show for soul. You know, he's a good looking man. He looks like me. We both look like the Ukrainian president, which confuses people when they tune into the show. But the show is good. We have Andre Tournier, the head coach of the new Utah team, on the show today, which was a really interesting conversation about, you know, what he's going through. The last few weeks have been insane, and now the next few months will be insane. And it was a really enlightening conversation about getting inside the mechanics of this relocation from Arizona to Utah.
Check out The Drop. Greg Wyshynski with Arda Ocal, who's raising the roof. I appreciate your time, man. I'll talk to you soon. I'll see you soon.
Anytime. Thanks.